5 p.m. on Friday, which means it's time for American Hit Radio here on WHPC 90.3. Wonderful to be here on a Friday at 5 p.m., one of my favorite times of the week. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host and extraordinary engineer, Heidi Morales Ryan, as we are going to present yet another hour of musical history with what we do on Fridays. We call the show How Music Changed. 250 topics that will take me three lifetimes in order to complete the entire list. You know what I've noticed that's really strange, Heidi? I've noticed that I am actually working on details for parts of this list of ours, thinking that when I get to do these shows, I'm going to have them organized. And one in particular is Miles Davis, because it's very complex. It's going to be really complicated, and there's a lot of stuff to cover. And I had the thought that I might not get to that show for another 40 years at the rate that we're going.
This is my first word on air, and everybody thinks you're making it up that I'm actually here. But I am.
Well, let me get this show going, because the sooner we get these shows done, the sooner I can get on to future topics as well. But this is a great one. I'm having a great deal of fun. This is actually part five in our series dedicated to the music of George and Ira Gershwin. And for the past two shows, we've spent a great deal of time discussing George's serious music, meaning, of course, you know, basically Rhapsody in Blue and his Concerto in F, which we played last week, which is such a gorgeous piece of work that is so overlooked. So it was great fun for us to air that. But with all that great music happening and all that focus on George's work, Ira got some short shrift. So we can pick up and make up for that a little bit with today's show by basically focusing a little bit on Ira's work. And we will certainly not be overlooking George, because after all, George is writing these fantastic songs that Ira is now working with. It was at this point pretty much where they start to work together with regularity. Now, as I mentioned in previous shows, the same thing is going to be true for this show. I am taking a lot of the text, the talking points for the show, from a book by Dina Rosenberg. It's called Fascinating Rhythm, The Collaboration of George and Ira Gershwin. This has been great because this book, more than anything else, helps me to put things into some chronological logic. And that's something that's really fascinated me, to find out that George did all those incredible serious works so early in his professional career.
I mean, was he even 30 yet?
No.
I know. It's incredible.
No. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I think at this point in time, we might be in the year about 1925. So let's pick it up. Even as George articulately promulgated in print the merits of the new American theater music, it was Ira who described the lyricist's new status, always in a rather wry, you know, humorous way.
Yes, a way with words.
Yeah. Lyric writing, like tea tasting and hitting the chimes for half-hour station announcements, has become a profession, he wrote in the New York World. In a quarter of a century, he continued, lyric writing had become its own precise and exacting craft, one that was quite different from playwriting and poetry. When people read poetry, they can study the printed page, but each song lyric is hurled at them only once or twice in the course of an evening, and the audience has no chance to rehear or reread it. Thus, good lyrics should be simple, colloquial, rhymed, conversational lines. Now, late in 1926, the Gershwins began work on O.K., a musical to be specially fashioned around the talents of Gertrude Lawrence, an actress that Noel Coward described as, quote, capable of anything and everything. She can be gay, sad, witty, tragic, funny, and touching. O.K. is about a woman as charming and quixotic. You say quixotic or quixotic?
I have no idea.
Never heard anybody else use the word. Anyway, as Gertie herself, and apparently Gertie's infectious warmth and spirit gave the show a special intimacy. Lady K is at once funny, tough, nervy, flirty, sexy, lonely, mischievous, vulnerable, clever, dreamy, and down to earth. Her story is set in a recognizable Wodehousian fantasy land. Kay is the sister of an English duke who is a rum runner on Long Island Sound, and they stash their liquor in the mansion of a wealthy playboy, Jimmy Winter, Oscar Shaw, whose unexpected arrival causes the complications to begin. Jimmy hides Kay from the police, and they fall in love, despite his engagement to someone else. Misunderstandings, mistaken identities, and assorted escapades precede the inevitable happy resolution. The Gershwins wrote each song for OK to serve a discrete dramatic purpose in the show. Thus, though most of the key songs grow from the same set of notes, they do not sound the same. The musical permutations and Ira's lyrics give each song its own flavor, whether wistful, assertive, sanguine, tongue-in-cheek, yearning, or desperate. The musical links among the songs in OK came to George intuitively. He did not consciously plan them. In fact, he put the overture down on paper after he and Ira completed the songs. Now, in the play, musical, Broadway show, Kay's first important song is Maybe, a duet she sings with Jimmy soon after they meet. The two are alone together on stage for the first time. They clearly like each other, but they are barely acquainted. And anyway, Jimmy is engaged to someone else. Maybe moves the pair forward to an emotional understanding. The ambiguity of the title, which denotes both uncertainty and possibility, is played out with an exquisite symmetry in both music and lyrics, which remains suspended between apprehension and hope until the last line. I happen to have a version of that here, as sung by the woman who is the sub-star of this program, Ella Fitzgerald. Here she is.
Excellent choice.
Her version of the song, Maybe.
Soon or late, maybe, if you wait, maybe some kind fate, maybe, will help you discover where to find your lover. You will hear you, he'll be near you. Paradise will open its gate, maybe soon, maybe discover where to find your lover, you will hear. You, he'll be near. You, paradise will open its gate. Maybe soon, maybe late.
Beautiful in the sense that if you think about it, in a Broadway show, it would normally, at the time when it was contemporary, George would have been playing the piano.
True.
For his own compositions.
Do you know who was playing it there then?
I do not, no. I don't have my notes here for that, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I do think it came from that, actually, you know, the Ella Fitzgerald
box set. That you have.
The songbooks for different classic writers. And she definitely has, from the Gershwin album, that was, she has like, actually it's a three-album set, I believe, when it came out on vinyl. One thing about this book called Fascinating Rhythm is that the author... Dina Rosenberg does some analysis sometimes of the songs. Now, sometimes it's a bit much, but very often it's quite helpful. I found this one interesting. The many held notes in that song allow time to think or imagine, and in George's case, to improvise at the piano. But Maybe is not a passive song. The deliberate nature of its main musical motif only heightens those key sections of the song that spring into action. For instance, the lyric to the B section goes, "Some kind fate, maybe, will help you discover where to find your lover." The first two lines are set to the song's slow-moving A rhythm and a similar melody. But in the second two lines, the music moves faster and the words are active. You must discover something for yourself, whether or not fate helps out. Maybe begins with a question, could this be true? In the song's opening line, the word maybe lingers. The song ends by easing the doubt, though not erasing it, in favor of something that feels promising. The opening words are reversed. Soon or late, maybe becomes maybe soon, maybe late.
Nice.
Right? The musical accent now falls on soon or late rather than maybe. Sooner or later, maybe something will happen, is what the song is suggesting. In the show, Jimmy and Kay kiss before they say goodnight. So it's almost as though, it's literally that the story progresses within Ira's lyrics on what would otherwise could have been just a simple love song. So quite beautiful. Now, in OK, quiet moments alternate with euphoric ones as the mood shifts back and forth between longing and certainty. Maybe is one of the score's wistful songs. It is followed by Clap Your Hands, an exuberant foil to the pensiveness of Maybe. Indeed, the five notes that begin the refrain of Maybe also begin the lively refrain of Clap Your Hands. By using the notes associated with Kay's romance in a song that moves much faster, the Gershwins were perhaps implying that the effect of love can be public and kinetic as well as private and quiet. Let's hear that song as basically in the hands of this vocal group who call themselves the High Lows.
Come on, you chillin'. Clap your thigh, hallelujah, hallelujah, everybody come along and join the jubilee. Clap of your hand, slap of your thigh. Don't you lose time, don't you lose time. Come along and shake your shoes. Time now for you and me. On the sands of time, you are only a pebble. Remember, trouble must be treated just like a rebel. Send him to the devil. Hallelujah, won't you come along and join the jubilee? Slap of your hand, slap of your thigh. Hallelujah, hallelujah, everybody come along and join the jubilee. Slap of your hand, slap of your thigh. Don't you lose time, don't you lose time. Shake your shoes, time now for you and me. On the sands of time, you are only a rebel. Remember, trouble must be treated just like a rebel. Send it to the devil. Clap of your hands, slap of your thigh. Hallelujah. Come along and join.
Wow.
Dynamic.
The High Lows there from an album of theirs called Nice Work If You Can Get It. That's, of course, their version of George and Ira's tune Clap Your Hands from the show OK. Now, later in Act One, Jimmy and Kay more fully acknowledge the feelings that begin to emerge in Maybe. In this song called Do, 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 the pair remembers the earlier song and the resultant kiss that started it all. You'll hear that in the lyrics. The first two lines of Do Do Do's verse, I remember the bliss of that wonderful kiss, are set to a musical line with a similar shape to the one that begins Maybe's verse, which is thus, quote, remembered, except that in Maybe, the music is tentative, off the beat, and not clearly in major or minor, while Do 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 feels more certain as it begins on the beat in major. Then, in the refrain, the A phrase ends on two notes that have a striking resonance with the end of Maybe's first phrase, reminding Jimmy, Kay, and us, obviously, even more strongly of that first kiss. But the questioning word maybe now has become the more knowing, though also entreating, baby. According to Ira, the words do, do, do and done, done, done tickled his and George's muse. And they ended. And it turned out that they wrote the song in only a half an hour.
Wow.
As performed now by Nellie McKay from her album called Normal as Blueberry Pie. Here's her version of Do, Do, Do.
You done, done, done before, baby. Do, do, do what I do, do, do adore, baby. Let's try again, sigh again, fly again to heaven, baby. See, it's ABC. I love you and you love me. I know, no, no, what a bo, bo, bo should do, baby. So don't say it won't come true. Baby, my heart begins to hum. Dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum-dum. So do-do-do what you done-done-done before. Thank you. the bliss of that wonderful kiss. You said that a boy could never get more joy from any little miss. I remember it quite, was a wonderful night. Oh, I'd adore it if we could encore it. I know, no, no, what a bo-bo-bo should do, baby. So don't say it won't come true. Baby, my heart begins to hum. Dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum-dum. So do-do-do what you done-done-done before.
That was a long last note.
That's a singer named Nellie McKay, who I admittedly I know absolutely nothing about, doing, I guess, a sort of a trad jazz version of the Gershwin song, Do, Do, Do. Now, musical comedy land in the 1920s, Showboat excepted, meant clearly happy endings. But blocks remain before a Kay's romance can reach fruition. The dramatic high point of her emotional journey comes in Act Two, when it looks as if she has lost Jimmy. Someone to Watch Over Me is a ballad of slow building and ultimately highly charged intensity, in which Kay comes to acknowledge, first obliquely, then directly, her feelings of loneliness and insecurity. Someone to Watch Over Me is the second in a series of great Gershwin ballads about looking for an elusive companion. The first, The Man I Love, is a description of an as-yet-unrealized daydream. I believe you played that song in show number two in this series. It is a hope for the future. The he for me is an unknown in that song. Someone to Watch Over Me takes the next step. It is about a particular someone, an actual love that may be lost, about feeling what that is like, wanting to change the situation but not knowing whether you can, and realizing that the need will not go away. The song touches one of the most universal chords of all. The yearning for someone to watch over us changes from childhood and adolescence through young adulthood, middle, and old age, but it is always there. As originally conceived by the composer, Ira wrote in the 1950s, this tune would probably not be around much today. At the piano, in its early existence, it was fast and jazzy, and undoubtedly I would have written it up as another dance and ensemble number. One day, for no particular reason and hardly aware of what he was at, George started and continued it in a comparatively slow tempo, and half of it hadn't been sounded when both of us had the same reaction. This was really no rhythm tune, but rather a wistful and warm one. Its true meaning revealed to its creators, George then took a step to ensure that it would get through to the audience. In the second act of OK, George recalled in the mid-30s, the glamorous Gertrude Lawrence had the stage to herself to sing Someone to Watch Over Me. It was all very wistful, and on opening night, somewhat to the surprise of the management, Miss Lawrence sang the song to a doll. This doll was a strange-looking object I had found in a Philadelphia toy store and gave to Miss Lawrence with the suggestion that she use it in the number. The doll stayed in the show for the entire run. Here, which what I believe is perhaps one of the most moving and beautiful songs ever written by George and Ira Gershwin, is probably the most classic version of that song, performed by Frank Sinatra from his album Songs for Young Lovers. Here's Someone to Watch Over Me.
There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that she turns out to be
someone who'll watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch over me. Although I may not be the man some girls think of as handsome, but to her heart I'll carry the key. Won't you tell her, please, to put on some speed, follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me. Tell her, please, to put on some speed, follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me.
Gorgeous version of that song by Frank Sinatra with fantastic arrangement by Nelson Riddle, Someone to Watch Over Me. Now, as an interesting point of contrast, that song being as important as it is, I'd like to play a second version of it, just that completely different, of course. In 1978, maybe, I think it might have been, it was the late 70s. Willie Nelson had been obviously a country artist, maybe not obviously, but up until that point, that's really exactly what he was. He was a country music songwriter who became a country music performer, and he did something odd in the late 70s. He released an album that was decidedly not country music. It was him covering a lot of classic songs that he personally loved. The album was called Stardust. And it was quite beautiful. It was a very captivating record. I remember I was a Willie Nelson fan of a sort at that time. And when this came out, I was sort of stunned to hear, you know, how he would interpret these classics. And on that album, Stardust, he does his own rather touching version of the song Someone to Watch Over Me. So here then is the exact same tune as performed by Willie Nelson.
Somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that she turns out to be someone who watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in would. I know I could always be good to one who watch over me. Although she may not be the girl some men needs to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me. Tell her, please, to put on some speed. Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me.
Two distinctly different versions of the same beautiful song, Someone to Watch Over Me.
Obviously, Willie doing that song made him immensely more accessible as an artist.
It was around this time, yeah, when he suddenly became a household name. And people were thinking of him as something much more than a country songwriter. He was a performer, and obviously not exclusively in the country idiom. So it went a long way. I know I enjoyed that album very much. Now, 1927 was an extraordinary season on Broadway. Over 260 plays opened, a total never yet surpassed. An unprecedented number were musicals, over 50 of them new, including Rodgers and Hart's A Connecticut Yankee and De Silva, Brown, and Henderson's Good News, featuring one of the decade's biggest hits, The Best Things in Life Are Free. The landmark musical of the year was Kern and Hammerstein's Showboat, the first popular American musical to treat such social issues as miscegenation, alcoholism, and abandonment. Several years later, George called it America's greatest achievement in light opera. Showboat was also the biggest hit show of 1927. That year, the Gershwins, too, tried their hand at writing a book musical of greater substance. But Strike Up the Band, an unprecedented American satiric operetta with a bitingly anti-war book by George S. Kaufman, died before it hit New York. Unlike Showboat, it had little romance and no melodrama to soften its message, so the Gershwins put further formal innovation in the theater briefly on hold and spent the rest of the decade taking 20s musical comedy to its limits. They would return to Strike Up the Band in 1930. Their 1927 musical comedy, Funny Face, reunited the Gershwins with the Astaires. By the time of Funny Face, the Gershwins' collaborative process was in full gear. Once we receive the outline of the plot, Ira wrote at that time, we really get down to work. We decide that such and such a tune is best for this or that situation. The tune decided on, I go to work alone. I do not use a lead sheet, as I can't read music. But this is no handicap, as after the melody is heard a few times, I can play it with one finger. After getting the title, I skip 9 times out of 10 to the last line and try to work the title in again, with a twist if possible. Every time I get a line, I sing it to myself to see how it sings. With Funny Face, George's stream of tunes stood him in good stead. Despite strong songs and stars, the book resolutely refused to work, and one of the original book writers, Robert Benchley, the well-known humorist and critic, left the show during out-of-town tryouts, wondering ruefully how he could ever criticize anyone else's musical again. He was replaced by Fred Thompson and Paul Gerard Smith. The Gershwins obligingly wrote song after song for new plot situations and characters. From Atlantic City to Washington to Wilmington, reviews remained negative and the audiences small. But the addition of Victor Moore to the cast, a substitution of the lighter He Loves and She Loves for the darkly sensuous ballad How Long Has This Been Going On, and the last-minute creation of a smash comedy duet for the Astaires, the Babbitt and the Bromide, all helped turn the show's fortunes around. Funny Face opened in New York on November 22, 1927, to rave reviews. Fred Astaire remembered how relieved they all felt. "The overall something was there," he mused. "What a pleasant surprise. Having gone through a series of mishaps and revisions on the road, we simply didn't know what we had." Here, then, is the song that basically helped to save the show, as performed, in this case, by Sarah Vaughan. Here is He Loves and She Loves.
One of my favorites, Sarah Vaughan.
Yeah. I know you're very fond of her. I think she's excellent. Of course, I've got some other female vocalists that I think I would rank.
Yeah, you think Ella beats her. Well, and maybe she does, but Sarah's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's a very moving version of that song, a very beautiful song that she does fabulously well.
Yes.
He Loves and She Loves. Remind you that you're listening to American Hit Radio, the How Music Changed series of American Hit Radio, which we do every Friday between 5 and 6 p.m., we being myself, Tom Ryan, and Heidi Morales-Ryan, and the station that we do it at, WHPC 90.3 in Garden City. We'll be continuing the series on Gershwin pretty much until we run out of tunes. And then we'll move on to another topic. Again, a more contemporary one, as we've been doing lately, and back and forth and back and forth. But now when we go back, you'll notice that when we go back, it seems like it's a little bit more interesting, perhaps, than some of the other topics, which I think were maybe a little bit more, a little bit tougher to swallow. I mean, this Gershwin series is nothing but a pleasure for me.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I'm loving every second of it. Now, then back to the show that we were talking about, Funny Face. Fred's character, meaning Fred Astaire, his stage character evolved considerably from Lady Be Good, where they worked together before, to Funny Face on this show. Though Adele's, his sister, stayed essentially the same. Fred's songs in Funny Face are more confident and positive. Now he knows he can get his girl with his dance steps. The song, Hi-Hat, and the dance that went with it anticipated his future film personality, the debonair man about town with a black silk top hat and an imp in his shoes. In an unusual song structure, the lyrics shift back and forth between Astaire and a male chorus, somewhat like a Gilbert and Sullivan patter song. As it so happens, I happen to have Fred Astaire's recorded version of this song. So here he is singing Hi-Hat.
When a fellow feels he's got to win a girl, he's handy. He will send her loads of flowers, books, and tons of candy. There's no use stepping out that way. The thing to do is lay low. You can't win by treating her as if she wore a halo. Well, here's my contribution to man. Hi-hat. You gotta treat him hi-hat. Don't let him know that you care. But act like a frigid dare. You'll win them like that. But keep your feet on the ground. Oh boy, how they'll come around. Just need some hi-hat.
Hi-hat. You gotta treat them hi-hat. You'll let them know that you care. But act like a pretty dare. You'll win the night then. Hat. Put on your gaze for that. But keep your feet on the ground.
The show version of the song Hi-Hat with Fred Astaire on lead vocals.
Perfect for him.
Yeah. This is where his character, as we just read, this is really where his well-known character as being like, you know, the Mr. Gentleman came from. Don't think of him too much as a romantic lead, and that's actually what we pick up. Because in Funny Face, Fred Astaire sang his first major solo love song with lyrics, "My one and only, what am I gonna do if you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you?" He beseeches his sweetheart, the accented blue note on "Crazy," emphasizing his plea. Of the melody to these lines, Isaac Goldberg, critic, was to note, "It begins Yiddish and ends up black." Here's Fred Astaire singing "My One and Only."
My one and only, what am I going to do if you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you? I'd be so lonely. Where am I gonna go if you turn me down? Why black and all my skies are blue? I tell you I'm not asking any miracle. It can be done, it can be done. I know a clergyman who will grow lyrical and make us one and make us one. So my one and only, there isn't a reason why you should turn me down when I'm so crazy over you. Show affection in your direction. You know I'm fit and able. I'm more than merely love you sincerely. My cards are on the table. Say there must be lots of other men you hypnotize. All of a sudden I've begun to realize as follows, my one and only. If you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you, I'd be so lonely. If you turn me down, why black and all my skies are blue? I tell you I'm not asking any miracle. I know a clergyman who will grow lyrical. Oh, my one and only. If you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you.
It's, when you listen to that, I'm having a funny thought that, of course, with all the tapping that's happening, you feel as though you might think that you need the visual.
I was thinking that, actually.
Right. But the thing is, like, if you've ever seen any movie that Fred Astaire has ever been in where he danced, it's just
you
so...
You can visualize
it. Yeah. It's so easy to close your eyes and just see it in your head. So it's almost like you don't really need to see it. It does work as an oral recording because your imagination can do it all for you.
Well, you've seen it enough.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen any of those old movies, Fred Astaire movies, the images come right back to you.
Yes.
And there you have it. Well, the show's now classic song is "So Wonderful," a tribute to young love that Frankie, as Adele, Fred Astaire's sister Adele, and Peter, her aviator suitor, sing together. 1927, by the way, was the year that Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic. So, of course, he's an aviator. Isaac Goldberg, who knew both brothers well, regarded Swonderful as a prime example of the Gershwins' symbiotic creativity. He wrote in 1930, "Their arrangement is peculiarly happy. They know one another's habit of mind. They live next door to each other, not only topographically, but mentally." Let us follow the process of producing that hit from Funny Face entitled Swonderful. George had been rambling over the keys and has come upon a sensuous gliding music that expresses the general notion. He plays it to Ira. Ira is soon humming the tune unaided. He feels, better than an outsider would feel, the very psychology of the music. And, as he points out, words may suit a specific rhythmic outline and yet be false to the essential meaning of the tune. In Swonderful, a whimsical reverie on love, Ira introduced a new contraction into written English. He removed the it from its and slurred the remaining s with the next word, causing a sibilant effect. The device is the lyrical equivalent of the gliding, falling thirds that characterize the melody. Though the contraction looks odd on paper, Ira had observed that many people elide their words in just this way when they speak. Thus, the lyric is in strict colloquial English, which helps it avoid sentimentality. The sibilance is complemented by a lyric device in the woman's verse, clipping the ends of words instead of the beginnings, thash, pash, and emosh, devosh. The literary cliché is an integral part of lyric writing, Ira would assert later. The phrase that is trite and worn out when appearing in print usually becomes, when heard, fitted to the appropriate musical turn, revitalized, and seems somehow to revert to its original provocativeness. Hearing Walter Catlett use words like pash for passion, delish for delicious, gave me the notions for half a dozen songs like Sunny Disposition and Swonderful. This is all that we've got time for, so this will be our last song in this series. I hope you can join us, of course, next week and every Friday until as we complete this series. And then stay with us for all the remaining Fridays so we can get through this whole series for this lifetime and my next, and we cover all 250 shows, all 250 topics for you. Meanwhile, here we will end as we began with the great Ella Fitzgerald as she performs the song Swonderful. Take care, everybody. Hope you can join us next Friday and Wednesday as well. See you then.
Good night.
Don't mind telling you in my humble fashion that you thrill me through with a tender passion when you said you care. My life so glamorous.
think you should care.